So thank you for your participation and for your support all the way around, both by participating and studying, practicing together with us, and also by, when you can, if you can, supporting us financially. Thank you. And thank you. And thank you. Please continue if you can. So it took a while to come up with a talk title. Seems like I'm always giving the same talk in different ways. But the one this morning that I ended up with, and talking to Uno also about talk titles, topics, is we are captive of our conclusions. Anytime you don't have a conclusion about the situation, we tend to conclude something about it. We feel safer. The ego, the self-centered aspect of consciousness, which is referred to commonly, of course, as the ego, feels better if we know what it's about, know what the situation is, have some ideas, some conclusions about it. Even though those may be incorrect, even relatively incorrect, but they protect us in some way. Very interesting for each one of us to look at how that shows up in your particular situation, life, mind stream, family, whatever, sangha for that matter. So it is not about getting rid of that, but rather seeing, rather being aware of the way you're locked down on some particular idea. With usually there's one or two or sometimes more than that stories behind it that back that conclusion up. The upside of that would be maybe actually protecting yourself from that person or that person that's taking advantage of you. So there could be, when I say could be, there probably is some kind of relative truth to that, that we tend to use as fuel to keep on what? Pushing on this, locking down on that, believing this, concluding this. This person is such and such and such and such because. And what I'm saying here is awareness, and not changing that, not fixing yourself, particularly improving, getting better, though that may show up in some way, something like that. We tend to believe what shows up in the mind. We tend to believe our ideas, our emotions, our thoughts about any given situation. It just feels more comfortable, safer, rather than go into everything, take nothing for granted, look at everything that arises. The teaching here is this is an illusion, and it's not something that if you believe this is an illusion, that illusion isn't going to necessarily continue to delude you. Has to be seen fundamentally. And that fundamental area, those the two fundamental areas that we need to see clearly are the belief in a self, a separate being, and the belief that there is an other or someone else or some other situation other than you. Just because the whole world is divided up into what's traditionally referred to as the 10,000 things, which is an understatement, of course. Lots of things. Lots of items going this way, going that way. And we tend to go to war with this and go to peace with that and take positions on this and that. And it continues to cause our world to spin and go around and continue to crank up that illusion that you have a say-so about this, that you have some kind of control. You have a little bit of control, but you don't have much. And I'm not saying we wouldn't have conclusions about certain things, of course. But when the motivation there is to clamp down on something and just conclude and not have any willingness to look any further into that situation to see what it is, because we're afraid or because we don't want to look wrong. Difficult area, and can't really necessarily be addressed too thoroughly in just talking about it. Seems to be necessary to do a lot of what we just did for a month. You don't have to continue to do that, but you should do some. You should do quite a bit of sitting meditation. What I'm referring to there is sit down, hold still, and watch what the mind continues to do without comment. And when you find yourself spontaneously commenting on something, then watch that. excuse me, it is about awareness. It is not about conclusions. It's not about correct and incorrect. It's about seeing what this is ultimately, fundamentally. Fundamentally is also, the way I'm using the word is ultimately, to see what this is ultimately. And that's when the whole thing, engine and caboose, all come apart. The whole thing just collapses because you're actually seeing what this is. Not just eyes, not just nose, tongue, body, not even mind, but consciousness only. You're seeing it. That's possible for you. Possible for anyone. So give me some energy here. Give me some questions. What?
In yesterday's book study, we talked about the Sambhogakaya, yes, and as possibility and energy of the situation.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how to relate to that possibility without getting hooked by the belief.
So the idea there is to observe the belief will start to close down. It'll be less light, but there'll be the illusion of safety. So when there's more light, the illusion, the feeling of safety, it starts to evaporate and we feel vulnerable. We feel sensitive. We feel unprotected. So just do the best you can with that. As Trungpa Rinpoche said, march directly into disappointment. If you're on the path, then you're going to have to relate with the First Noble Truth in a way other than just trying to get rid of suffering and trying to stop it or cure it or make it go away. You have to actually receive it so you can see what it is fundamentally. And so that would be in line with what you're asking about. Just receive that. That is Sambhogakaya. That is the three kayas if you do it completely, thoroughly. Without expectation. If you're looking for results, that's it's a kind of a hunger to conclude something. More?
Jesus in mind, what do I do with the hunger to conclude something?
Just observe it. Just be hungry. Complete. Because if we buy into that and we shut down, then like the talk title suggests, that we're captive, we're a prisoner of that.
I feel like I've spent the last few years kind of shutting out that energy. And I wonder if that's a misunderstanding, if that's
shutting out what energy?
Possibility, like trying to just relate to what's showing up rather than my imagination particularly.
Yeah, should receive all of it. Just different. You can differentiate between what is showing up, the sound, and your imagination about that. The differentiation is fine. Just don't pick and choose. See that there's a difference, but don't necessarily value one over the other. That's where we get into trouble, and that's where the whole thing starts to spin. As soon as you grasp one end, the other end begins to flop around because it wants to be acknowledged also. It's called non-duality, to be able to see it. This is to be able to accommodate, just to use a relative term, anything that arises without grasping, rejecting, or shutting down. And then you will actually function in relationship to that the way it's completely appropriate. This is when wisdom becomes skillful means, or upaya. There will be no doer. No, there's nothing done, but the illusion continues in a certain way that might have a lot more clarity there than the illusion that's continuing in a certain way that is loaded for bear. It wants results, wants to know who caused this situation. More?
I think I've heard you say something like the conclusion concludes itself.
Yes.
Does it look like a conclusion?
May not. When I say the conclusion, it concludes itself, and thank you for remembering that, which that would have been a good talk to it, because that is ultimate understanding. You realize you're just helpless, but you're not really helpless because there never was a you to be helpless. There's just that feeling of helplessness is about an identity that is tied up with this body mind, where we think we are a body mind going somewhere, living. There is life, but there's no one living it. Life is everywhere, but there's no individual here. That doesn't mean that when you look in the mirror, you don't see something there. But I often recommend that you go and look in the mirror. Spend some time looking in the mirror. See if you can find out who you are by looking in the mirror. So it is about continuing to return to this very simple situation and watch what occurs. As far as imagination or what anything else that arises in the mind, don't differentiate. See the difference, but don't necessarily grasp one and shut the other one down. This is more valuable than that. That's the way you actually learn. Use a common word. It's not the conventional learning, but you learn how to actually be with all things. Whatever shows up is has its own credential. Needs to be there. It's difficult. It's difficult to watch your life start to occur rather than you get to decide what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. That's why I say don't do anything unless you have to. Hold still. Don't move to Arkansas. Quit your job and go for another job, just to name a few things. Don't get a divorce. Don't get married. Don't do anything unless by looking at this situation, it's just choiceless for you. You just have to do that. Not easy. Or
be unknowing. Can you get lost in the light?
Lost in the light? I hope so.
How come?
Because there isn't anyone. There's just light. There's just consciousness only. This doesn't mean that all kinds of negativity might not be creeping around your bedpost. It doesn't mean that you won't have scary things or challenging things or confusing things come and go. But as I've said this maybe 100 times, it's not happening to a person anymore. It's your consciousness just witnessing dependent origination. You're watching the illusion. So there could be light. Even the idea of light is just a pointer. It's not the actual. The actual light is invisible because there isn't anyone. And because you're not, you are that light. It's not some kind of fancy romantic thing like we're all one. We're just all one. That's complete bullshit spread by people who are probably their intention is about helping people. I don't know how helpful that is. Maybe it is.
Michelle Vine. You often have said to look deeper or further into a situation.
Yes.
And I always feel like I get really hung up on, I don't really understand what you're asking us to do.
Okay.
Can you say that? What do you mean when you are saying look deeper into the situation?
I'm saying look right at the surface. That's deeper. Whatever shows up, look right at that. Looking deeper isn't necessarily leaving that for what you think about it, or leaving that for your speculation, or leaving that for your idea of going deeper. Look right at the surface of it. Look right at the wall. Look right at the feeling that arises. That's how you go deeper. Because deeper is, and deep and shallow are polarized in relative truth, but ultimately they aren't separate. And you don't have an option to go deeper. But you do have an option to look right at whatever's arising. If it's arising in your mind, it has to be there. It's supposed to be there. It needs to be there. Has the authority as what it gets its authority from everything else to show up as that situation is, just like the meditation is called as it is meditation, 5 days a week. More about that? Yeah, more. We can go deeper into it. It's a good question. No. I appreciate it. So
nothing shows up.
That's deeper. Because you've actually looked into it and nothing is showing up. And that's just what the space where nothing shows up. That's the depth. Not the space where you find something. That's the surface. So do that. It's a conceptual device that just showed up here as we're talking and I'm responding to your question it just shows up because I'm looking at what you're looking for. That doesn't make me different than you. And if it does anything, it makes us the same. You're looking for something. I'm looking at it and I'm saying, just look at the surface. It's very simple. It's like talking to a person who's fishing. You didn't need any more information in that area. Are you a fisher person? Well, don't start. Mom. Don't fish for anything. You know, Bowen,
is looking deeper involved? Does that involve questioning?
Situationally, it could. It could involve quite a bit. It might involve even writing a few things down on your legal pad or in your notebook or something, or something you can think about or contemplate. More?
You know, I was wondering if questioning can be done without words.
Yes. Just the intention or the inquiry or the curiosity about what is arising, the curiosity about that, look into that, receive whatever shows up, whatever is moving, look at it, and look at, you can get pretty complicated here conceptually, but to actually do that, there's not much happening. You can actually look at it and see if you can see what's behind it. There's something in front of it. There's something off to one side. Is it hanging on to something else? Is what you're looking at, is it clear? And then that will come up of something about clarity or lack of clarity will come up. Just watch all of that. It's just a way of contemplating something besides just receiving. You're making a few comments or a few decisions, you could say, relatively. I'm going to look at the front of it. I'm going to look at the back. Sometimes it's taught, classically, it's taught to see where thoughts arise and see how they hang out and see where they go. Pretty hard to do any of that.
More? You know, buying one more. If we see some kind of clarity, is that a conclusion?
Yeah, it's a comment or it's a phrase or wording or a conclusion about something. So you've left what it is for a description of it. Sano,
increasingly often, just nothing comes up for me. There's no opinion, no. I don't know, just nothing. I don't mind it, but is that clarity or is that something else?
It could be the clarity about nothing coming up, of course. So, but it's just it's just the mind is beginning to open up, or maybe not even the word beginning might not even apply there. But just an open dimension and just continue. Don't fill it with anything. Don't come to any conclusions about it. More?
Son, hold on. In the nothingness, there are often no questions.
Yes.
Is that a problem?
No. Not at all. Just continue. Just return. Return to the cushion. Return to the wall. Return to awareness practice over and over and over again. Study with others. This is very important. Something we, in this particular community, in this Sangha, in this monastery, we emphasize this. And if you haven't noticed, I also participate. I don't come in at the beginning of it, but I come in at the end to respond to some questions. Hopefully they're helpful. But it's very important to talk to others who are studying the same thing, especially under the same teacher, with the same understanding of how this path is constructed, how this path shows up. More, Sano?
Okay, good. So the title is Captive of Conclusions. What would be an indication that we become a prisoner of our conclusions?
We just believe how we feel. How we feel about something is more important than the something. We've actually abandoned what showed up for how we feel about it. It's a kind of a replacement situation, which is not the name of a band. For the replacements. Well, then that wouldn't confuse you if you haven't heard of it. More about it if you have it, please. Let's go.
Binyabhavan, I'm just wondering if there's some visceral or physical indication too that could accompany the distaste of not coming to a conclusion.
I'm still not hearing you, but what does he want to know?
And I think of you, of course, as a teacher, at times, you say that as your teacher said, the purpose of the teacher is to insult you. So what I experience is kind of a hardening when certain situations arise that I don't like. Is that an indication of a conclusion?
Sure. And the idea here is, I might say don't conclude, but I know you can't help but do that. But bring as much awareness to the conclusion itself and see what that whole dynamic is about. See if that conclusion is covering up something you need to look at. Because conclusion is just a highly sophisticated form of ignorance. That doesn't mean that it doesn't have some relative supports that you could take to court, or you could stand up and say, well, this and this and this, so therefore this. And always find some way to get your way or make it look like you're winning, or you're ahead, or you're the one who's correct. But as far as the path goes, you have to just receive everything that shows up without abandoning it for what it's about or what it means, or get some kind of temporary protection by concluding and case is settled. Gavel hits the tabletop, whatever. All done.
Are you buying? So would resistance be a conclusion? Mm-hmm. Buying?
No. Seems like it. The way I'm hearing you ask it, but you want to say more? You're just riding you already boarded that train. You're not about to get off from it or see that you've gotten on the train of conclusion. And you're just going to stay there and look out the window and distract yourself. If you already decided that, that's water over the bridge. We're not going there anymore. We've already decided. We've already concluded. And myself, you might be talking to yourself about that. More? A lot of room there. You have it. Anyone on the Zoom have a question?
Susan Bowling.
Go ahead, Susan.
Susan, would it be fair to say, I mean, my question has to do with fear, that everybody that's tuning in here and everybody with you, that when we ask a question or don't ask a question, I mean, either before we ask it, when we're asking it, after we ask it, there's some fear like, oh my God, maybe it wasn't good and I'm not smart enough and maybe I'll be humiliated. And I mean, is fear something that just connects us all the time? Bowing.
Well, we certainly have that in common. Of being, it might show up different for each person. My great fear when I was much younger, many years ago, before I even stepped on the path of being people finding out how stupid I was, or how embarrassed I was, or how self-centered I was. And I felt like I couldn't say too much. But then when I would talk a lot, then I'd be really embarrassed because I felt that everybody could see how what a terrible person I was, so to speak. And then I met Rinpoche in 1973. But it was different with him because I decided I was going to ask for his help. I was going to get his help. And I was all through hiding out from myself, from whatever this was. I'm done hiding out. And so that began my study with him as a student of Trungpa Rinpoche and as a meditator. But the fear is still there. I still have fear. Fear has a different texture to it, a different quality. But it has been seen through, if I may say it this way, it has been seen through that there's someone here, but that someone is not solid. But if you come in front of me and present your case of your difficulty, this person solidifies immediately. And I'm ready to knock your head off if you haven't noticed. But I have to have your permission. I teach directly out of what I'm looking at. So therefore, it's probably not going to show up, going to show up as very respectable sometimes. Sorry about that. Not sorry, but something I can say, I guess. I can't help it. I can't do it any other way. But yes, you're correct. Everyone is covering up fear in some way or another. If you get right down to go right down through the floorboards into the basic substrate, the basic foundation of the personality, there's fear. Fear that because the ego, the self-centered mind wants to hang on to that identity, and it will blame others in order to do it. And it will even, in some cases, not here, of course, but even torture and murder others, murder whole groups of people in order to reify, I'm the important person. I'm the person who knows everything. Sometimes this shows up not so much on the world stage, as they say. Stage is probably a good word for it. It shows up in relationships, just one-on-one relationships. Teacher, student, husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, all of those. Employer, employee, just all kinds of different ways that it shows up. Fear, if there's fear and the underlayment of that and the foundation of that has not been looked at, then the person won't know they're afraid because they're operating out of passion, aggression, and ignorance, pushing on something, justifying something, explaining something. Explain, justifying and explaining. And even though it might have a lot of very strong dynamics in it that make it very convincing to 75% of the people who are listening in, maybe or maybe more, very convincing that this person is correct about this situation. We live our life that way, continuing to cover things up. More, Susan?
Susan Ballin, thank you. So even when we see that we're unified in a sense by fear, and yet opinions and judgments of what we consider the other are still arising. In other words, you think we would be more sympathetic or sensitive. But are those opinions and judgments just more, we just can't deal with the fear is on some level.
Yes,
is that
true? Yes, and sympathetic and that kind of relative understanding is good and is valuable, and we need some of that. But that doesn't go in and look deeply at the basic underlayment. And what is there is fear of not existing. Fear of death is a simple way of saying it. And fear of that this whole body-mind complex is going into what? Oblivion. There's no guarantee you're going to have another lifetime or you're going to, or that when you die, you aren't going into your very worst fear, going right into a hell realm because you've been hiding out from it your whole life. And suddenly now your body's passing away. Could be when you're 13 and you're in a accident. Could be when you're 75 and you die of what do they call them? Natural causes, as if there's some unnatural causes. They're all natural. So, we don't know what's coming. This body will anchor us and support us in this illusion for a certain number of years or time, the illusion of time. We're anchored here. We actually can point out a past and a future, and we use our memory to establish that. If we can remember what happened yesterday, but no, you can't. There's no way you can be anywhere but right here. But we fill it full of the past and the future. So we have the illusion that we are a separate being in this organism we call a human body. And then we fight about it, argue and fight and agree and disagree. This is why the spiritual path is so important and rare. Most people are on a mundane path of accomplishing, avoiding failure, controlling their lives as much as they can, and not really willing to or even inspired to look at the fundamental nature of consciousness, which is without a self and without an other. It's just consciousness only.
Susan Ballin, can I ask you one more
Certainly.
Question? So even though, or now that you've shown me this, you know, really digging down, there's the fear. I feel now like fear is like my constant companion. And I see it everywhere in things that are totally ridiculous. And I see how I'm afraid of, you know, if I don't pack now in 2 weeks when I have to go away, something will happen and I won't be ready to go. In other words, what I'm wondering, am I becoming more neurotic or not?
Well, since I've known you, you haven't become more neurotic because I saw that when I met you. But I see it in myself. I'm not free of neurosis. I couldn't help anybody if somehow I had got levitated beyond any issue and I'm teaching from on high. No, I'm right in the middle of the same shit you're in. That's how I know about it. And so I would say no to come answer your question or respond to your question, at least, maybe not answer it. But I'm still seeing that. But I also see that you're more and more aware of the way you confuse yourself or buy into your negativity or turn your negativity around and blame someone else for it. So I see that you're much more clear about that. So sitting meditation, working with a teacher, working with a sangha, studying together, it works. It just takes time. It takes a lot of time, and it's very different for each person. Everyone's path is, as we go along, you realize that you're going to have to realize awakening your enlightenment yourself in the midst of your five skandhas and in the midst of the grasping at those and in the midst of grasping it with passion, aggression, ignorance. You're going to have to do it. And that's what you're on the path to do. And that's where your question is coming from, because the more you sit, and I can tell that you've been sitting more just by your question. If you ask anyone here, ask me a question, I can get an idea of how much time you spend on the cushion. And I also might be able to even get an idea how much time you spend on the cushion thinking about getting off the cushion. It has to be some point where you just sit there. That's when the whole shebang, as they often say, I've heard them say, falls apart of me and my stuff, my world. It's unreal. If you see this as unreal, you're no longer afraid of your emotions. You're no longer afraid of, you can get mad. You can just be happy. You just notice that those are just temporary stages, temporary emotions and feelings that come and go and come and go. Realize it. Realize it yourself. You can do this. Oh, I'm not here to do it for you. I'm here to, with your permission, to give you a shove or give you a suggestion or something. Maybe. I don't know. Yes, sir. Pal-Shan.
Pal-Shan bowing. How do we not confuse believing our own conclusions and saying something is choiceless?
So it's just very, very much simplify that. Just watch the way you're grasping at the conclusion, grasping at the idea. Watch the grasping of that. So instead of trying to push it away or validate it or change it or be upset by it or any other, maybe a dynamic I've missed that you might be experiencing, but just rather than go into some kind of something or go into the fundamental feeling of what you're asking about and just, again, a word I rarely use, but I'm going to use it here. Just surrender to it. Be genuine. Be who you are. Be the crap you're trying to get rid of so you can get an idea of how that works. It's another, if you can actually do that, you might find that that will never go away. And people might even think of you as being humble. You won't be because you're full of yourself, but they might think you're humble. That's all right if they think that. People can think whatever they want to think. More?
Now, Sean Bowing, is there a way that I can avoid fooling myself into thinking something's choices when it's actually conclusions I'm not even looking at? Bowing?
That's pretty good. No. You're welcome. It's always about awareness. There may be a thing over here where because of awareness, and I say because very lightly, because of awareness, this stops being open and closes up. And there may be another situation with the same person or with another person that just through very, very vivid, direct perception of what this is, that situation opens up wider. I'm just saying you can't determine ahead how anything is going to happen because the causes and conditions are so incredibly elaborate and beyond counting. It's like numbers don't even work in this area. It's just too much. Just like, you want an example of that? I'll give you one that's here every day, or I should say every night. Go outside at night on a clear night, look at the ground. Now look at the opposite of the ground, which is everything else. You're actually looking at consciousness everywhere, not just in the form of countless trillions of stars, but trillions of aspects of consciousness that are everywhere. Early questions if you have them.
Michael Bowing.
Go ahead, Michael.
Is a way of looking deeper into fear just looking at it and your intentions that arise?
Yes, just look at it directly.
Why does your intentions become important then?
I'm not sure I'm following what it is you're wanting to know about. My response was based on what I thought you wanted to know, but apparently that's not it. So what is it? Be as direct as you can. Let me know what it is you're looking for or want to know.
Does fear change with what we add to it?
Well, it could, with what I was saying earlier, it's or endeavoring to say, when fear shows up, if you do anything with it other than just be afraid, then you're covering it up. It could be you're running away from something. You're covering up, you're reevaluating, you're blaming someone else for what you're feeling. Anytime you're having an emotion, if you raise your finger and point to anything, anyone, any situation, it's not that that might not have some relative truth, but it's just a mundane path reinforced, trying to accomplish, trying to correct, trying to fix, trying to have a say so, trying to manipulate something in this very, very temporary situation we call human life. It's very temporary. It is coming to an end. All compounded things that are put together, will vanish. That's pretty much guaranteed. If it shows up, including your worst thought, and including all the difficulty you were having 2 weeks ago with some situation, maybe the situation is still there, but you just don't have that intense emotion about it anymore. It's gone. And you didn't push it away. You didn't do anything with it. And it just came apart because nothing lasts. Your worst fear, your worst anything. You know what I'm saying. All of you do. Nothing lasts. Impermanence.
Is it our belief that fear is bad?
Well, isn't it? It's pretty bad. I think it's pretty bad. What is it you want to know? Yes, fear is bad.
Yeah, but Michael Bowing, is it the quality of our beliefs that basically the belief that there is good and bad?
Is it what?
Is that what is so discouraging?
Yes. Yeah, belief in the polarity, belief in the picking and choosing. They somehow, if I just make the right choices, there are people who make a fortune out of telling people that. You just have to make good choices. And then they charge you a fee. And then they tell you how to make the good choices, apparently. It's not that you can't make good choices in a sense, but it's an illusion that is unreal. And there's no guarantee that what you're doing is going to have a good outcome to it. There's too many variables happening there. You could be making all the right choices in your life and suddenly, you know, you go to the doctor just for a general checkup and you find out you have 3 weeks to live. That's happened to people in the Sangha that are now passed on. They thought they were going to be around for a while and we all thought they were, and now they're gone. Are they gone? No, the body is gone, but who they are can't go anywhere. Don't believe anything I say. You find out. You find out yourself. I'll help you do that. You need to become a Buddhist officially. I can help you do that. You want to just listen to a few words once a week? That's fine with me. Do whatever you want. There another question anywhere? Yes.
Didn't you?
Yes.
After hearing you talk about not setting up standards and relating to things situationally, I notice I have an aversion to setting up standards. It seems like I try to I have this idea of what it looks like to leave things open.
Okay.
Could that resistance to setting up a standard actually get in the way of some protocol that needs to be set up?
It could. And just that you asked the question, it sounds like maybe that is happening there. So just have the intention to do it. Don't have the accomplishment. I have to lock down on that. I cannot set up any standards. So there might come a situation where something just becomes standardized just for 30 seconds, for 3 days. It becomes a kind of a reference point for you, and then it dissolves. We have to almost get into the stories about that, what you're referring to. Not time to do that here, but that teaching of not always so, Suzuki Roshi's title of one of his books is not always so. Nothing is always the case. It's an astonishing, simple phrase. Not always so. Go ahead.
How can we actually relate to things situationally?
How can you do that? Start in the mind stream. Relate to whatever rises in the mind. Just receive it. Don't accept it. Just receive whatever shows up. A sound. You just receive it. You just hear it. Just smell. Just taste. You can do this in the mind stream. You can just think. There are other ways of teaching where ideas try to get you to stop thinking. And even though I practice that, I don't teach it because I think I think that you need to think. You need to have a relationship with thoughts that is one of being respectful to your thoughts, but not being swindled by them. Being respectful and your emotions too, by allowing emotions. Live your life. Don't miss your life. Actually feel what you feel. Think what you think. But don't leave that for some project that you have to do to shut something down or control something. You can do that. You can actually be what is showing up. There isn't anything else with this. You can realize that it's possible. More? Take a few more.
Jishin bowing.
Jishin, go ahead. I'll come back to you.
What is that dynamic that you mentioned, that when we grasp one end, the other end wants to be acknowledged?
It's just a way of talking about relative truth. Anytime you grab anything, the other one starts to move into place to be the other end of the seesaw, the teeter-totter. Or just like if you grasp at peace, you're going to have war. Don't grasp at anything. Don't do anything with anything. Anything that arises, be respectful of everything that arises, including what happens in the mind stream. This is what you're doing practicing Shikantaza. You are generally training yourself to relate to the natural equanimity that you were born with, your birthright, to just be present, just consciousness only. You can do that. And then when you get up off the cushion or go into your everyday situation, that's where it becomes challenging because you run into people that have no mind training and are all about working with the mind, working with the world by way of controlling it, judging it, evaluating it, fighting with it, shutting it down, pushing it aside. So this is what I mean by grab onto one end of something that's being true. This is true. And then the other end creates more chaos because it's disrespected.
Thank you. There's also a question from Naishal in the chat box. She asks, when you say don't teach, what is meant by teach? Bang.
So I would say don't give anyone instructions on anything unless you're asked. If you're given permission, if someone asks you questions, then respond to the question, but don't continue to teach after that. So when I say don't teach, I'm not saying it's you're doing something bad or evil, but you might want to be a student for as long as you can rather than suddenly move into some kind of teacherhood because now you understand emptiness or now you understand the five skandhas are no longer one skandha. Now that you understand Vasubandhu was saying in the 30 verses, you've studied them all, so now you understand, now you're ready to teach. Be very wary of doing any kind of teaching about anything. So just receive, be a student forever. And then if you may meet someone at some point who functions as a student, you have a connection with them, some kind of connection, and you're able to just spontaneously, naturally help them with if they happen to be a meditator. So that's basically what I'm saying there, Nyshel. And if you have a further question about it, you can ask me. Oh, she said no, thank you. In other words, no, thank you. So it's a good question. It's what I'm saying. Don't, when I tell people don't teach, I'm just encouraging you to be a student as much as you can. It's not that you wouldn't have somebody that you could work with by teaching them. We even do that here in the monastery once a month, which I think we're doing here next Saturday. We're actually going to invite each one of the monks here to sit up here for half an hour, 20 minutes, whatever it may be, and talk about a particular topic. Sometimes we assign a topic, and sometimes we might say just some aspect of the Dharma that you are drawn to, get up and present that. That's a different kind of teaching about the Dharma. The provisional teachings is different than pointing out the fundamental nature of reality. That's what I'm saying. We tend to get into that because people want to know what ultimately is true. Not, they don't necessarily, as soon as you help them in a relative way with three or four responses to questions, the next thing they know is, they want to know is, so who are we? What are we here for? And those kind of questions. I would say stay away from those. Or if you're really clear on who you are and what this is, you'll be honest and you'll be genuine. You will say what? Your answer will be what? It's not a standard. But the standard will be, I don't know, because you don't. And if you do know, then you also know that you don't know in the conventional sense, and you won't be able to help but teach. Now, this is not a choice for me to sit up here and do this. Why would I do this with my old age? That's a rhetorical question. You have to answer those. Tell me, why would I do this? For notoriety, yeah, I'm getting a lot of that. And for so people will like me more. How's that going? Not too good.
So they can buy your new book.
They can buy my new book, yes. I'm getting filthy rich on my Dharma books.
It comes out on your birthday.
Is this an advertisement?
It is.
Okay. Sometimes pronounced as an advertisement. Yes, on my birthday, August the 15th, 2028. What was my birthday?
April 18th.
So, and the book is a very interesting book, and it's one that between Unyo has worked on. Paoshan is basically the person, the person that just asked me that highly intelligent question a little while ago. You all remember what that was? He's the one that's taken these hour-long talks and condensed them down to 60 seconds. He's done quite an amazing job doing that. If you go onto YouTube, you'll see some of those 60-second videos. They're based on hour-long talks. And also on TikTok, if that doesn't frighten you too much, TikTok is not actually that threatening. So I'm on there, and I don't know how many. Is there 50, 60 of those on there?
On YouTube, yeah, there's a bunch.
On YouTube and on TikTok. But anyway, and so what he has done besides condense those down and really without losing a lot of the tailwind there in the talk, has actually put these into a book, that we're calling 60-second Sokozan. And so if you can read one page or a page and a half or something, where you're actually reading the transcription of the 60-second condensation of it. And pretty good. So it's something you can read in very quickly, and it's not the various topics are what?
Well, there are 52 of them. You could read one a week, and they're one page long.
Yeah.
And they're like a poem.
Yeah, it's, very much.
It's different from what you're
reading. Yeah, it doesn't even sound like me. It sounds more like Baoshan.
Very nicely.
Probably his Baoshan.
Real words.
Huh? They're my words. But his what do you call that when you put things between other things? The glue. He's glued the words together in such a way that makes no sense to me, but he seems to be delighted with it. So that's all that counts. No, seriously, this it should be an interesting, a different kind of book. I don't think there is another book like that. But there isn't anything like another book like the 108 Meditations either. 108 times where you're given instructions on how to do what. Sit down and look at yourself. That's my basic teaching. Be aware of who this is, yourself. You do it. I don't know anything. But I know that that is a way to work with your difficulty in your life. Okay, Jackson.
Ryoka Bowing, Ross from Ireland has a question on YouTube. Ross Bowing, what is often appearing in sitting is just pictures and images that don't really mean anything and seem like a big jumble. Should I be trying to understand them, Bowing?
No, just receive. And if you do find yourself wandering into some kind of evaluation or figuring out some particular set of images, just receive that. Everything that arises in the mind stream as you're practicing Shikantaza could be, you could say it this way for a while. Eventually, you won't have to do anything like this. But initially, for the first few years, maybe 10 or 15 years, I don't know. Depends on what you came into this particular realm with. Just observe. Everything becomes an optic. So even the going off in the distance, trying to understand or unwind something or deconstruct something in your mind stream, as soon as you see that you're doing that, then it isn't, you don't push it away. You don't necessarily drop it. I wouldn't drop anything. But just, it's another object. It's an object of meditation. It's showing up in awareness. It has its own ticket to ride. It has its own validation inherent in its objectivity, which is unreal. Just look at that unreality, no matter how solid it seems. Don't fix it. Don't accept it. Don't reject it. Don't ignore it. Don't. Just observe until you, when I say until, eventually there won't be anyone waiting for anything. Patience is not waiting for something. There really is no such thing as patience. There's a practice of that, which involves the duality of me and other stuff. Is there a final question somewhere? Susan.
Susan Bowing. So because I hear you say a lot, with your permission, I'll, whatever. So it, are you talking
about... Wait. I never say whatever.
Okay. I said whatever, excuse me. You say I'll help you or... But I can't remember exactly what your words are. What I want to know is that permission verbal or is it something you're seeing in us? Which is it?
Oh, it's a little of each. You would have to come this way. And I have people tell me, say, oh, yes, you have my permission. Please, I want you to be my teacher. And even we'll gacho and say, and don't mean it. They just want to be, want to show up as a student, but they do not really give me permission. But what do I would do? What do I do with that? I just receive them anyway. I don't know, but 20 minutes from now, 20 years from now, which I probably won't be here, but then they will start being able to do that, be able to actually function as a student. So everyone is so different. You've gone through that with me. You've asked me to function as your teacher, and I've agreed. And your relative, the way you relate to this teaching person, has changed over the last couple of years quite a bit, I think. It looks like to me you're more and more apt to give me permission to respond to things that are happening with you or things that are issues or problems than you were a year or two ago. Would you say so?
Susan Bowing. Yeah, because you're not, I guess, I don't see you as threatening as I used to. And I see you so much want to help us that if we don't do our part, we're not going to get the help. Bowing.
Well said. And everyone is so different. So some people only want a little bit of help. They don't want to, and quite often I won't hear from them very, very much, maybe every 6 months or less, or eventually I don't hear from them at all. That's their business. It's their karma. It's their life. They've done nothing wrong. People should do whatever they think they should do. I'm not going to interfere with your life unless you give me permission. And for instance, if somebody comes here and sews a robe, you're giving me permission. So those of you who are still in the practice of sewing a robe, stop. Don't take another stitch. Unless you want this, unless you want the truth as it is seen by this person, you want this teacher, then continue to sew, ordain, and become a monk. Well, what do we have? 10 monks, 12 monks? I don't know how many. But even people who are monks, if you interview everyone here who is a monk, I relate to them completely differently than the other one. There's no standard for how to do this. And even though I might tell somebody who's a monk to do this or do that, if they don't do it, then they're not necessarily chastised or punished. But we might talk about it a little bit. Why can't you do that? Or what's that about? And they'll tell me what they're up against. So it doesn't become a kind of a dictatorship. There's still workability, except you might get more pressure from me to function in a certain way and serve the community. That's the main thing I say, is help others. Help others. That's hard to do, especially if you're having turmoil in your own heart, your own mind, or going in circles there, to actually drop that for 30 seconds. I never say drop it. Take your attention away from that and put it on the needs of others. And it might be a simple thing like taking someone to the store. Very, very situational. Very good. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Chiezan, the prior at Sokokoji Buddhist Monastery. Sokozan offers these talks without expecting anything in return. If you value these talks and would like them to continue, please visit our donate page at www.sokokoji.org. Thank you.